statistical analysis. The second week they spend all their time sorting through the BCs that they collect, and the third week is usually trying to get them to deal with the statistics and the data analysis issues. And also a few prac quizzes as well, just to make sure, or hopefully they can attempt to understand what's been going on in the pracs, because it is obviously quite different to what they find in the lectures. The new unit structure is quite different, obviously. So instead of the lecture periods, they have three modules, and instead of the 2 hours of lectures every week, I've made it into a 2-hour tutorial. Now, this is actually quite new. It's only going to start next year, so I actually haven't put this into practice yet. So it's all, it's waiting to see if it actually will work or not. But essentially, the main reason for this is to try and get more activity in the lectures. So actually get them interacting with each other and also with me. And again, rather than me just standing up, sprouting words of wisdom, they actually come prepared to interact and make a significant contribution. Still have practicals, so 3-hour practicals each week, and a few lectures, because again, there are certain things that can only come across well. There's some technical themes that I think come across best as a lecture, especially things like sort of how statistics are used in entomology, like examples of how statistics are used, good experimental design. Obviously, that can take an entire sort of degree to do as well. So if you're working with a range of people, some have got good backgrounds, some have got poor backgrounds, sometimes it's good to give lectures. And again, we can do those by podcasting them and having online lectures as well for those external students as well as internal students that are there face to face. And generally just being more interactive. The context of this is also in my philosophy of teaching and what I teach into. So I teach about a quarter of the first year introductory biology, and first semester to first years. Here again, this is essentially lecture material, but what I'm trying to do here, we've got the little clicker systems where they can actually give interaction with me, 2-minute feedback issues, and also they buddy up with each other and answer questions, so trying to get them interacting at least in first year. I also have a third year insect plant interactions unit, which I developed 2 years ago. And that's very much based on individual and group learning, where they're actually there's no lectures at all, there's a textbook, and there's information. They have to do 4 or 5 individual modules throughout the semester. They do group assessments. They also write a grant proposal for the equivalent, I guess, to the NSF grants related to climate change, because that's my research interest as well. And basically, again, I give each individual student a separate taxa to identify the impacts of climate change on that taxa, and they have to write a grant proposal, which is really great. It scares the bejesus out of them, but once they actually learn that it's actually useful for them, you know, things like coming up with a budget, saying that if you're going to only spend $12,000, you're not actually going to be employed yourself, so you know, you've got to be realistic here. And what I've done is to try and embed the entomology curriculum within that. So there's more self-directed learning that they're probably getting in other units at UNE, but also giving them that security blanket that I'm there and there's sort of good sort of assistance when it's required, and also helping them along. But again, giving them the idea that they're learning by themselves, they're getting the answers by themselves, but spending a lot of time before that setting up the infrastructure to make it easy for them to learn. And also going into the more advanced, Sci395 is a third year independent research program. It's a mini honours. Honours is like a half master's, I guess, where they do a 1-year research project. There's no coursework, but after honours that they can then go into a PhD program in Australia. Sci395 is also assists them determining if they actually want to do research or not, and if they can do it, if they can write a 6-month report. So it's sort of this context, and this is great for me because it actually gives the students a sort of minor degree in entomology, and it's also a selfish thing on my part, so it actually directs them in my interests as well, gets them away from other areas, which obviously there's a lot of competition for, you know, getting grad students, and it's very difficult to get good students going through to honours and PhD. So in some ways there's a lot of, you know, there's interest in here, but there's also a mechanism to get them interested in entomology and keep them going into going to do research. So the three modules that I've developed, at least to start for next year, is on insect diversity, insect pests and quarantine, and forensic entomology. The first module is essentially getting both them and I used to using Blackboard and interacting with each other. We used, again, it's another change we've got for next year. We've been using WebCT as our online system, and the university, well, WebCT and Blackboard have merged now anyway, so we have to learn how to use this new system, and we've been told we have to use it. It also gets the students used to learning using Blackboard, and also getting used to submitting information online. We're going to a system as well where it's a paperless assignment, so all the, they have to be put through a screening system for, I think, turn it in to a plagiarism software. So all these, a lot of the major assignments have to be done that way, just to get them used to using electronic submission, but also using notes where they can keep their ideas in a format so they don't lose them, and keeping them online so I can sort of be big brother and actually read them as well to make sure they're doing the non-accessible tasks. And also discussions, getting used to being interactive with other students. Again, a lot of these external students are used to just being isolated, and it's one of those things, getting them used to open up and talking to other students and realising even though that they're 3,500 kilometres away, they basically can still chat to people and actually find out what people's interests are and get really into the topics and actually get really interactive with each other. More from an entomology point of view, just basically identifying what an insect is. I've gone through this in first year, but essentially when I get to second year, I have to go back to assuming no knowledge, because once they've done the final exams, they've lost it. You know, you can't assume, you'd love to assume that they're that far forward, but you really have to go back and start again in second year, because I think there's just a, there's such a big difference gap between when they do first year and when they start in second year. Also assessing information from various sources, you know, understanding what is potentially good and bad information off the web and other sources, identifying, you know, major parts of the insect, and also getting them to understand phylogeny, what is, you know, how things are related to each other in a relatively simple way. The second module on insect pests is, you know, trying to understand what an insect pest is and understanding not all insects are pests, and also how does a pest species differ from a native pest species, which is either a beneficial, a mutualist, or just an insect going about its own business in a sense. And going in particular, if there are insect pests out there, giving them a brief understanding of the research that can be done on insect pest species, and also working with, you know, what does a farmer do? What do you do if you're on a farm and you have insect pests? You know, ideas of economic thresholds and so forth. A lot of these students are from a city background, so they've got really no idea about what happens, you know, 5 minutes away from Armidale on the farm, actually working out how people deal with pest species in a real world sense. And obviously quarantine as well, what's done to keep the nasty species, particularly out of Australia, and also what happens once they're in, and also using biocontrol agents. Again, quite important areas where a lot of the students are starting to get jobs, especially in Australia. And finally, it's a module on forensic entomology. Again, I've put this in mainly because from the one or two lectures I've done on this, it really takes their imagination. Some of them love it, some of them hate it, but at least they have an emotional attachment to it in some way. And so I think that's a good thing. And it also goes through, this is where that, as we go through the modules, they get more and more independent in their learning as well. So I'm giving them more independent information that they have to go out and assess. You know, essential things like still going through decomposition and importance of succession, insect life cycles. Then this is where they get into really fundamental points of critiquing scientific papers. You know, when they read a paper, the assumption is it must be good because it's published. You know, it's out there, someone else has written it, so it must be true. How they can actually be critical, but in a good sense. It's not just saying, this is all terrible, everything done's terrible. It's actually being a critical in a good way, hopefully. And also understanding experimental design and a bit of statistics, at least simple statistics. Very, probably you're all aware of the variety of statistical abilities of students, especially coming in, and at least bringing them all up to a basic level. So I can say, especially when I go into their third year unit, you all are at this level, you should all at least know how to do ANOVAs, chi-squares, and even understand, you know, still understand what a p-value is, you know, things like that, which they, some of them can get through. I mean, not knowing that, especially if they're coming from an arts side, which they can get through, you've got to get them to a prerequisite level. I just put that photo in as well because of the, that's an echidna. I don't know if you can see when we're sampling out there, the for insects, we had a, very rarely have a backbone friend come up to us and actually start to burrow into one of my honours students when she was sitting down trying to collect insects. Nothing to do with forensic entomology, but yeah, very inquisitive little fellow. The other thing I thought would be fun is, determining, you know, how insects relate to society. And here, I mean, I was very taken with some of the Insect Fear Festival, my May Berenborn over here. And I actually started doing just showing insects, like some B-grade insect movies, just because they're my interest as well. And they went great. They went down really well with the second year students. So I think I'll actually keep that within the, actually make it the last week at least, to keep the interest from the last week, so when it's a bit more relaxed and you can just show things in a wider context. So the assessment, three modules, basically different types of presentations here. So worth individual points each, an insect collection, and also the main thing here is also interaction. So they're actually getting marked on their interaction on the Web CT process and interacting with each other. Okay, now I'll quickly go onto the website just to show you what's how it's done. Now this might actually, hopefully it hasn't changed too much, because my what I've been doing here has been working with an IT guru and also a teaching guru, because a lot of stuff coming from just being an academic, there's a lot of information here I couldn't have set up myself. It looks, I mean, I'm really amazed at how this website has been set up. And obviously there's things you can do by yourself, but it's great if you can spend some time working with an IT person, coming up with fantastic ideas. I mean, starting off with a cartoon to start every module. You probably can't read the writing here, but it's essentially, I wonder if I can get rid of some of these things. No. So unfortunately you can't see it, but essentially there's, at the start of each module, there's this gang of four that, you know, they've finished semester, they're going through, and I actually, one of the things they said to me, you've got to write a story. And I actually, not being a creative writer, they got me in to do this, and they basically go through particular comics, and I won't go through it in more detail, but essentially that starts every module. Then they get questions down here which they have to answer, and then it goes down to readings. And the other thing that they have also done is develop interactive building of morphology of insects, so they actually can build up their own little insect as well, and they can make a Beelzebub, so they can basically put it together in a whole variety of ways if they want to, but they can learn sort of about morphology. Here's some idea about a phylogenetic tree which is wrong, so they're actually saying, you know, what's wrong about this particular phylogenetic tree. And I'll just try and get to the insect. Okay, so they just see a few different images there and try and work out what is an insect and what is an arthropod. Well, I'll stop there and I'll just show it up while I answer any questions. So thanks very much for listening. Oh, here we go.
Is this a password-protected website, or can anyone access
it? It is at the moment, because it's on Blackboard. So we do have, because it was funded by the university. I'm not sure of the copyright implications. But I think, yeah, one of the things we all wanted to do when we were actually making it is to making it free for anyone to use, because it's great investment in entomology teaching.
I want to thank all of the participants who have come and all of the audience who have contributed to the discussions. And I'd like to take just a very quick minute to try to put a ribbon on today. We've had people on our program that have talked about the role in university education and small college education, the role in teacher preparation, opportunities in industry, effective and ineffective projects, undergrad student perspective, graduate student perspective, and faculty members' perspective. I'd just like to close this with some things that I came across looking at more the big picture of this. And this is something that I'm very passionate about, and it's that the impact of college is largely determined by student effort. Ernst Pasquarella at the University of Illinois has written a very nice book about this, but just the concepts that students aren't recipients of institutional effects, that they themselves bear a major responsibility for their education. And I think engaging them in research at a very early age is a way to transmit that ethic, that sense that Peter just comes pre-prepared with, that you wish you had in so many students, and that getting them engaged in this is just a great way to do it. The other thing that I experience as a teacher of undergraduate students is that a lot of them are working off campus in jobs that don't teach them a darn thing. And there's this wonderful book by Eric Schlosser called Fast Food Nation. And he talks about that in the fast food industry, where a lot of these kids are working, the whole industry is based on a person with an IQ that's very low being able to function. So they're not a very stimulating environment. And I think if we want to improve the quality of these young people's education, anything we can do to get them out of doing that for 20 hours a week, if that's what they're doing, and get them into a laboratory where they're doing things that contribute to their education, we've done a great thing. I think it's also critical because it's just a foundation of a democratic society. Our young people are bombarded with messages about you should borrow money until there's no more money to borrow, and that you should eat food products that aren't really that good for you. And I think whether you're a scientist or not, engaging these young people in research teaches them the critical skills they need to be a functioning member of a democratic society. I found this also an interesting way to put a ribbon on this symposia. Dylan Thomas is quoted as saying, "Something's boring me, I think it's me." And I encounter a lot of students who are bored today. And I just think that they're not actively taking the initiative like Peter has for their own education, own research. When I looked up "I'm bored" on the internet, I got 9,300,000 hits. And I even found that there's an I Am Bored website that you can go to celebrate with others who share that. Well, my education in teaching methods is one course, and the text that was used was a 1979 text. I dug it out, and I found that they listed 30 teaching strategies, and that engaging undergraduate students in research was number 27 of the 30. Well, as Dr. Hingmoss and I were preparing for this, when we looked on internet hits now, you can see that those suggest that it is well entrenched. The other thing that I think has been important to me and my involvement in this is trying to approach it from a continuum, from the time they enter college till they graduate. And the pyramid that Dr. Matthews talked about getting undergraduates involved in being mentored by graduate students, helps everybody. It just becomes a pyramid and a continuum of teaching and learning. And so to me, that's one of the big benefits. Having your graduate students have the experience of mentoring someone, I think, is very helpful to them too. I think the call to move in this direction is loud and clear. I've listed some of the better known organizations that have made it very clear that Funding undergraduate research is something they're very interested in, and so we're doing something that has the institutional support of major players in science. I want to conclude with my own pet project. I thought students having fun doing undergraduate research would be a good way to conclude. I work on honeybees. This is a drone honeybee, and when they mate, they don't randomly go out and hang out looking for queens. They aggregate in certain areas called drone congregation areas. And the location of those areas is something that's not all that well understood. And so it's a great thing to engage students in research, because everybody's interested in who's your daddy. And with drone honeybees, it's a very important thing, because with the African honeybee coming into our bee population, there's a lot of interest in being able to have some control over mating of honeybees. It meets Dr. Matthews' criteria of being a low-cost project. You need a few helium weather balloons, a hydrogen tank, a jar of alcohol with some dead queens in it, and you simply take this alcohol solution, put on a piece of cotton, and then hang it and fly it from a balloon into the areas that you want to investigate. And when you get into congregation areas, you will have large numbers of these creatures show up. So it's a great project for me, because undergraduate students can work during the day supporting graduate students in their research, and then at about 3 in the afternoon, everybody's attention turns to running over and checking out two hours worth of that little window in which they fly to see where they are congregating. And they generate interesting data, and no one has previously really described where these would form in a Midwestern agricultural setting. Previous studies have been done in other types of areas. So if you have a number of students do it over the years, your cumulative data can help you really determine where that happens. The other beauty of this is there's clientele groups who are really interested in this, who will invite these young people to come speak to them, and who will even contribute money for scholarships for them to come to meetings like this and present that work. So it's turned out to be a fun way to spend the summer for the students I've had do this. They have interesting discussions with onlookers when you're walking around with a fishing pole on campus, and it has a side benefit of improving their fishing skills. So we really appreciate everyone's contributions today. Unfortunately, we're all preaching to the choir. We all share this enthusiasm, and I hope we'll take it as a mission to go out and spread it to our colleagues and get more people involved in what we all obviously agree is a very important part of educating young people. So thank you.
I'm going to have to confess I'm pulling the bait and switch on all of you guys. We had intended in June, when we sent in the abstract, that we would have no problem, in June, have no problem getting these respirometry studies done. And then the respirometer arrived in about 7,000 parts. And Don Mullins has worked very hard to get that piece of equipment together. And as of 2 weeks ago, we got our first baseline data. So I really don't have anything to show you. So I'm switching and talking about another opportunity I had to do some research working on fumigation for bedbug control in a multi-unit facility. Now, a lot of you out here on the West Coast or down south do a lot of fumigation, see a lot of fumigation done for drywood termites and things like that. In Virginia, where I am, we rarely have any fumigation at all. And we don't have drywood termites. We do have some wood-boring beetles, but usually the infestation is not so extensive that anybody turns to fumigation. So it's generally really considered a last resort, and primarily due to the price. And in talking about bedbugs or other types of pests that get in structures too, that most people are turned off by the idea of fumigation because they just simply hear what the price is and think it's astronomical. But what we're starting to see now with the bedbugs is that in these sensitive type environments where you have people of varying degrees of delicacy and there's multi-unit situations, fumigation's looking more reasonable, especially in regard to if you compare a one-time sort of treatment to repeated applications of residual type insecticides, particularly if you have people who are health compromised, that are the residents, or you have the insecticide-resistant bedbug populations, which of course we're seeing all over the country. Environmental complexity, with that's been touched on, and I'll show you some examples in a moment, or where we have local politics or publicity. And this was a situation that we were able to work in where some of these housing situations actually get a lot of publicity for having bedbugs in there, and then local politicians have some commentary on that. So I was working together with Mark Fisher of Dow AgroSciences to look at bedbug response to fumigation using Viking. And we had this wonderful opportunity to work in Reading, Pennsylvania, in the Samuel J. Huber apartments. These were built in 1970. They have 8 floors, 10 units per floor, low-income residents, it's elderly, disabled people living in there. They have a long history of bedbug problems. At the time that we were there to do the fumigation, they had numbers on about 40 out of their 80 units total had been treated for bedbug problems using conventional methods, and they still had plenty of bedbugs. And so they were looking at not having to do this constant retreatment. Some of the factors, of course, that are contributing to the bedbug infestations is that you had residents that would be moved from one unit to another for a bunch of different reasons. Of course, we had residents that would be visiting each other. Also, the sharing of belongings. Somebody gives somebody else a couch, or gives somebody else a mattress or a lamp, something like that. And even these communal areas here, this is down on the bottom floor. You know, this is kind of a stark environment, but almost everyone in that facility at some time or another will be down there either meeting their friends, watching TV, or more often waiting to be picked up and given a ride to somewhere. So this is sort of a central area where you wait to be picked up and go to your doctor's appointment, that sort of thing. Why the conventional treatments had failed? Well, because most of our treatments, the insecticide treatments, are baseboard, crack and crevice type applications, be they dust or liquid. You just look at a situation like this and go, okay, well, how many cracks and crevices are there? And what do you do about bedbugs that are up here in between sheets of paper and things like that where you cannot really treat? This place, where do you find a baseboard? You can't get within 3 feet of the baseboard. And of course, all of these stuffed animals, just like Mike was showing, you know, they have bedbugs all over them. How can